Biden's feckless leadership has shown China, has shown Ukraine, has shown Iran that they can feel free to be much more aggressive on the world front, to the point where even they will try and meddle with our elections here.
Wait, Ukraine is meddling with our elections?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Good Lord.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI in Round Mountains, KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's, AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet. So the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. All right, before we get started proper, I just want to play that the full version of that clip that we played at the top of the show there, Desi.
Yeah.
Because boy, these Republicans, they will just never stop choking that chicken, I guess. So that was the new Trump handpicked chair of the Republican National Committee, the RNC, or I guess he's the co-chair along with Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump. That was Michael Whatley on Fox News over the weekend. And listen closely as he describes Joe Biden's foreign policy as feckless because it will encourage China, Iran, and Ukraine to meddle in our elections.
Look, I think that we are seeing right now that this election truly, truly matters on national security, on every one of these issues. When America is weak, the world is a far more dangerous place. And right now, Joe Biden's feckless leadership has shown China, has shown Ukraine, has shown Iran that they can feel free to be much more aggressive on the world front,
Iran,
to the point where even they will try and meddle with our elections here.
Yeah, Iran. China, okay, sure, but Ukraine? That's some pretty fancy and frankly insidious pro-Russian propaganda slided in there. China, Iran, and Ukraine are suddenly our adversaries, the enemies of the U.S. that we need to worry about do not include Russia, according to the head of the RNC. Russia, which we know, by the way, has definitely been meddling in U.S. elections since at least 2016. But no, you got to worry about Ukraine meddling in our elections. Don't look there. Don't look at Russia. You just look towards China and Iran and somehow our allies in democratic Ukraine, which is fighting for its very life right now after being invaded by an imperialistic Russia who didn't make Whatley's list. An imperialistic Russia hell-bent on wiping Ukraine from the map and making it a part of Russia, before Russia then marches on to its next conquest. But Whatley doesn't even mention Russia in his attack on Biden's feckless foreign policy that is putting us all at risk, because the Republican Party has now become little more than an overseas branch of the Russian Intelligence and Disinformation Agency at this point. From the top of the Republican Party itself, Donald Trump's hand-picked chair of the RNC to actual members of Congress themselves actually advancing specific Russian propaganda in Congress. Russian propaganda that has now been documented once again this week by the Washington Post in an exclusive as coming directly from the Kremlin, Desi Doyen. I mean,
it's kind of mind-boggling. And yes, this is the chair of the RNC, the co-chair of the RNC, grasping at disinformation straws on behalf of Russia. It's really mind-boggling.
And you've got other Republicans, by the way, now calling out their fellow Republicans for doing that, for passing on Russian propaganda, even as Ukraine is now said to be nearly out of munitions in what is now the third year of their defensive war against Vladimir Putin's invasion, as Republicans in Congress continue to hold up billions of dollars in military support for our European ally at the behest of Donald Trump. And yes, his autocratic hero and strongman dictator pal, Vladimir Putin, who has said out loud, Donald Trump has, that he would welcome Putin to, quote, do whatever the hell he wants to our NATO allies. Are we seriously considering electing that guy to be the president of the United States again? Really? Yeah, really. And by the way, he absolutely could win. And though President Biden's poll numbers have finally begun to shift in his direction, in Biden's direction, as we discussed a few days ago, the battle between American democracy against fascist autocracy remains on the ballot this year. And on that score, we've got a melange of topics today, Desiree.
Oh, that's a $5 word.
Well, there you go. I've got some actual, not pretend, news today about still more actual, if wildly underreported, accomplishments by the Biden administration. We'll have a few more of them, by the way, later this hour in Desi's latest Green News Report.
Yeah, some very good news coming up.
Yeah, as the EPA, Biden's EPA, continues to be on an absolute tear implementing new rules to fight climate change and decades of cancer-causing pollution by huge corporations. I mean, I got to tell you, when all is said and done and the history books are written on what the Biden administration has accomplished, whether or not he serves a second term or not, when it comes to the action of his executive agencies regarding climate, there will be a huge story to tell that really should be told and lauded right now while it's actually happening. But on another topic, and this is why Republicans are doing everything that they can to kill what they regard as the administrative state, the ability for executive agencies to implement specific laws with specific rules that Republicans and their corporate campaign funding buddies just do not like. The Biden administration on Thursday announced that they have done with executive rulemaking procedures and legislation what gun safety advocates have been calling for years now, and Republicans have been blocking for years now. Common sense safety, gun safety regulations. As according to the Gun Violence Archive today, there have been some 106 mass shootings in this country so far this year. More mass shootings so far this year than there have been days in this year. So for the longest time, Democratic lawmakers have fought for, frankly, what I see as some of the lowest hanging fruit, really, when it comes to gun safety reforms. The idea that everyone who purchases a gun should need to go through a background check to prevent, you know, criminals and domestic abusers and people on the terrorist watch list, etc., from being able to purchase deadly weapons. And yet, Republicans, at the behest of the terrorist-supporting National Rifle Association and other such groups and huge funders of Republican campaigns, have been blocking efforts to close the so-called gun show loophole, where vendors who sell guns at gun shows, as opposed to brick-and-mortar gun shops, are not required to run background checks before selling all the deadly weapons that they want at these shows. But maybe at least until another Republican comes into the White House to reverse it, may be that issue, that huge gaping hole in our background check system for years and years, maybe that is finally now coming to an end. As ABC News reports today, the Biden administration on Thursday announced that they are closing what is often known as the gun show loophole by tightening up the definition of what it means to, quote, be engaged in the business of selling firearms. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the ATF, has just implemented a change in the Federal Register language in accordance with the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which was passed in 2022 and signed, yes, by President Biden. The administration rolled out the proposed rule back in September of 23, taking in almost 400,000 comments from the public. And now, prior to the passage of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, ABC reports those, quote, engaged in the business of firearms dealer were required to register to become a federally licensed firearm dealer, according to the previous language, but only if they had sort of a brick and mortar store. The new definition that ATF has implemented on Thursday is more specific to better regulate the market in accordance with the new federal law, as the White House explained. The rule now explicitly lists the type of commercial activities that indicate whether a person must become a federally licensed dealer and thus be required to run a background check on gun purchasers. It prevents people from evading the licensing and background check requirements by claiming that they're just selling a few guns. And it prevents people from falsely claiming that guns are part of a personal collection, which otherwise exempts a seller from running a background check on the buyer. By being more specific and precise in the definition of what it means to be, quote, engaged in the business of selling firearms, administration officials said it would require more people to register for a federal selling license and run a background check on the person that they are selling to. Currently, there are more than 80,000 licensed gun dealers in America. They all have to run background checks, but the Department of Justice estimates there are some 20,000 unlicensed sellers who are selling firearms through online advertisements, through gun shows and other means, all of which evade the need for the buyer to go through a background check. So this new regulation is meant to close that huge loophole. That's a big deal. President Biden said in a statement that he is taking action to make sure fewer guns are sold without background checks. Quote, this is going to keep guns out of the hands of domestic abusers and felons. And my administration is going to continue to do everything we possibly can to save lives, he said. Congress needs to finish the job and pass universal background checks legislation now. Yes, because even if this new regulation passes legal court muster, and you know it will be challenged, likely all the way up to the corrupted right-wing U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But even if it passes muster, it can still be reversed by another president unless it is cemented into actual law by Congress. On Thursday, the final rule was signed off by Attorney General Merrick Garland, who announced the new rule during remarks at the DOJ.
If you sell guns predominantly to earn a profit, you must be licensed and you must conduct background checks. This regulation is a historic step in the Justice Department's fight against gun violence. Too often, these black market guns wind up in the hands of people who are not allowed to have them. It will save lives.
Merrick Garland went on to tell reporters that the new rule, quote, will close the gun show loophole and it closes the fire sale loophole as well by clarifying how firearms dealers who go out of business or lose their license must go about liquidating their inventory. It used to be that you could call a fire sale and then sell them all you want with no background checks needed. Said Garland, quote, under this regulation, it will not matter if guns are sold on the internet, at a gun show, or in a brick and mortar store. If you sell guns, you must conduct background checks. Again, low-hanging fruit, but boy, has it taken a lot of time to get to that fruit.
A lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of lives, but hey, there are people who are going to survive the next year because this law has passed. I mean, this executive order has passed.
A senior administration official told ABC News they are confident the actions are legal and will stand up to potential challenges in court. Quote, strong regulations like this one are not in conflict with the Second Amendment, the official said, but we shall see. Nonetheless, this is a huge accomplishment that the Biden administration finally did. It has long been called for. It is wildly popular with the American people, if not those right-wing arms industry lobbying groups who fund Republican campaigns, and thus would be very unpopular for another president to roll back. So good luck to the president who says, yeah, we need to make it easier to buy guns without background checks. And frankly, this is something that the American people need to know about in advance of this year's elections, though in truth, I saw very little coverage of this story at all on Thursday, Des.
I know, me neither.
So that's why I wanted to sort of lead with it today, so at least our listeners know about it. Now you do. Speaking of this year's elections, I should note that while the presidential candidates for both the Republican and Democratic parties are largely set, with both Joe Biden and Donald Trump already receiving the needed number of delegates to win presidential nominations of their respective parties through the primaries so far this year, barring any surprises, and why would we have any surprises these days? They will both be officially nominated at their conventions this summer. But primary elections and caucuses continue this year around the country, including this weekend for Democrats in Alaska, when they will hold their primary, and for Democrats in Wyoming. And yes, there are some. But they will hold caucuses on this coming Saturday as well. As to November's elections, well, we told you a few days ago about how Ohio's Secretary of State has notified the state Democratic Party that unless the Democratic National Convention is rescheduled for earlier in the summer, which ain't going to happen, or the Ohio State Legislature changes the law, unless one of those two things happen, Joe Biden will not qualify for the Ohio state ballot in 2024, which of course seems ridiculous and unthinkable that a presidential candidate, in this case the sitting incumbent president, would be blocked from appearing on a recent battlegrounds state ballot due to a pretty much random statutory deadline in state law. But, you know, desperate times and all of that for Republicans, it seems. The office of Ohio's Republican Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, sent a letter to the Democratic Party last week warning that the DNC, scheduled to start on August 19 this year, would miss the state's August 7 ballot deadline. Either the DNC would have to be moved up or the Republican-controlled Ohio General Assembly would have to pass a law changing the deadline, but they have to do it by May 9. So we already told you about that. No sooner did we report on that story earlier in the week than another state's Republican Secretary of State has now threatened the very same thing against Joe Biden. Quote, there are no exceptions to Alabama Code Section 17-1331B, said Alabama Secretary of State Wes Allen in a statement, citing the state's August 15 statutory deadline. Quote, if I do not receive a nomination from the Democratic Party that complies with Alabama Code Section 17-1331B, I will not be able to certify the names of the Democratic candidates to appear on the November ballot. Now, in 2020, 4 years ago, the Republican National Convention took place after the statutory deadlines for nominees to be submitted to actually both Ohio and Alabama. But in both states back in 2020, when it was the Republican Party that wasn't going to meet the deadline, there was actually no real conflict over placing the Trump-Pence ticket on the ballot. Ohio legislators passed a law to change the deadline, but it was for that year only, while Alabama accepted a letter from the RNC promising to, quote, certify the party's nominees as soon as the official nomination is complete. That was enough. All it took was a nice letter saying, we promise. So that's how it was when it was Republicans. When it's Democrats, well, I mean, so this the thing, it's likely a nothing burger. At least it should be a nothing burger. But we will see. Democrats are taking these challenges seriously, according to Semaphore. And while Joe Biden probably isn't going to win in Alabama this year, Ohio, so, you know, it may not matter if he's on the ballot or not in that sense, but Ohio is a different matter, and they are examining, Democrats are examining their various options in the event that Ohio's Republican-controlled state legislature doesn't just do the right thing and simply change the deadline for parties to submit their nominees for the ballot this year as they did back in 2020. Of course, desperate times call for desperate measures from the GOP, so I think it's wise for Democrats to, frankly, take nothing for granted this year.
Yes, I would agree with that.
But I am old enough, I got to tell you, to remember back when Republicans thought the idea of a state removing a candidate from the ballot was an outrage. Even if that candidate had specifically violated the Constitution's insurrectionist disqualification clause as determined by a state's high court. And I am old enough to remember when the corrupted right-wing U.S. Supreme Court pretended that the Constitution didn't say what it said about that and that it would corrupt our very constitutional order and somehow affect every other nation, every other state in the Union. If even just one state was able to remove a candidate from the ballot, because, you know, I'm old enough because that was about a month or so ago. So even an infant can remember that. Plus, both Republican secretaries of state, Frank LaRose in Ohio and Wes Allen in Alabama, they were both opposed to the idea that Donald Trump could be removed from the ballot. They opposed the lawsuit that was filed actually by Republican and independent voters that challenged Donald Trump's ballot access this year by plaintiffs who argued that the former president had violated the 14th Amendment's insurrection clause. So LaRose and Allen were against it then. So, well, anyway, apparently they're not against it anymore. We'll keep our eyes on that story, even if it feels kind of like a non-story. But we are taking nothing for granted this year.
Should never do that with when we're talking about these high-stakes elections and Republicans being as desperate as they are.
Speaking of desperate insurrectionists and battleground states, Georgia's sitting Republican Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones will be investigated for his role as a fake elector for Donald Trump back in the 2020 presidential election. That, according to a state official on Thursday. Now, Fani Willis, the district attorney of Fulton County, Georgia, has already brought dozens of racketeering and other felony charges against Donald Trump and 18 allies in a sweeping election case. But she was disqualified in 22 from continuing to investigate Lieutenant Governor Jones because she had hosted a fundraiser for his political rival. By law, in Georgia, when a prosecutor on a case is found to have a conflict of interest, the head of the so-called Prosecuting Attorneys Council of Georgia, a state government entity, is then responsible for choosing a replacement for that district attorney. After facing criticism for not moving more quickly to find a new prosecutor, Pete Skandalakis, the executive director of the council and a former district attorney himself and a Republican himself, said on Thursday that he would do the job. Now, as you know, the Trump campaign enlisted fake presidential electors in 2020 in a bunch of swing states where Trump was defeated in order to pretend that they were the real electors as part of an effort to steal the election that year in those states and across, well, steal the election nationally. 24 of those fake electors are now facing charges in three different states. Willis chose to reach cooperation deals in Georgia with most of the fake electors there, but she did charge three of them who had prominent political roles in the state, including David Schaefer. He's the former head of the state Republican Party. He's been charged. And Kathy Latham, the former Republican, the chair of the Republican Party in Coffee County, Georgia. She was charged on both fake elector-related charges and for her role in helping to facilitate the unlawful breach and theft and distribution of the state's voting system software in Coffee County. Now, at the time of the 2020 election, Burt Jones, he was then a state senator, but he has since become the state's lieutenant governor. He's believed likely to run for governor when Republican Brian Kemp will be termed out in 2 years, in 26. So felony charges against him could leave a mark. In addition to serving as a fake elector for Trump in 2020, Jones argued for a special session of the state legislature to be called in order to overturn Trump's loss in Georgia. And he signed on to a lawsuit seeking to do exactly that. Both of those efforts failed because there was no evidence that Trump somehow won the state of Georgia. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports that Jones flew to Washington, D.C. on January 5 of 21 to try to persuade Vice President Mike Pence to delay certification of the Electoral College votes. Though Jones told the news outlet he ultimately did not raise the matter with Pence. Don't know if that's true or not, but it sounds like Pence is going to be coming in for another interview. Jones has defended his actions. So what should we expect from Scandalakis and his investigation of Jones? Well, he spent more than a quarter century as the elected Republican district attorney in a five-county area southwest of Atlanta. In 2021, according to the New York Times, Georgia's Attorney General Chris Carr appointed him to investigate the fatal police shooting of Rayshard Brooks, who was shot in the back by two police officers in 2020 as he ran away. Scandalakis announced in August of 2022 that charges pending against the officers would be dropped. Although a number of Georgia Democrats consider Scandalakis to be fair-minded, according to the Times, he has also garnered criticism for moving slowly in choosing a prosecutor to take up the Jones matter before ultimately choosing himself for the job. A group of Georgia lawyers filed a lawsuit, in fact, accusing him of dragging his heels. One of the lawyers accused Scandalakis of delaying his choice for political reasons. In an interview earlier this year, Scandalakis acknowledged that it had been a challenge to find a prosecutor to replace Willis at all. He claimed that some elected district attorneys around the state had declined because they claimed that they lacked the resources to do the case, and that private attorneys who could also have been selected here turned it down because the state would limit them from being paid more than $70 an hour. That's what Scandalakis claims. His moves regarding Jones have been closely watched because while the Republican appointed trial judge in the existing Fannie Willis case against Trump has allowed Willis to remain on the case despite charges by Trump attorneys of a conflict of interest, his defense lawyers are now trying to appeal that decision. So if Willis is eventually removed from the case on appeal, that entire case and all of those felony charges in that huge RICO case brought by Willis would once again fall to Scandalakis to choose her replacement. And if that were to happen, the issues that made the Jones matter a challenge for Scandalakis, including accusations of partisanship and limited resources of potential replacements and not being able to pay people enough, well, that would become even more daunting for him to have to replace Willis in this huge, sprawling case. So this investigation of Jones and how it, what it might tell us if Willis is needs to be replaced. Well, all of that, I think, is also worth keeping our eyes on in the weeks and months ahead. All right, let's take a quick break here. We will come back with more on what is the biggest story of the week that has absolutely upended the politics of the 2024 election. Not just the presidential race, by the way, but pretty much every race on the ballot this year, particularly for Republicans, following the decision by the Arizona Supreme Court to reinstate a law from 1864 that bans almost every abortion in the state. We'll have more on the national and, frankly, at times, hilarious fallout from that decision and news on, for I believe the first time on this program, Des, news on election 2025.
Oh, boy.
That and Desi's GNR are all still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
I do love that song. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Well, Fox News's evening primetime so-called opinion hosts completely ignored Tuesday's blockbuster 2024 election-shaking ruling from the all-Republican Arizona Supreme Court reviving a 160-year-old state law that bans abortions under almost all circumstances, as the Fox News Channel continues its pattern of shielding its viewers from stories that could damage Donald Trump's presidential campaign. Arizona's restored statute, quote, forbids the procedure except to save a mother's life and punishes providers with prison time, the Washington Post reported, under the 1864 territorial law, which went into effect 48 years before Arizona even became a state, and of course, before women were allowed to vote. Anyone who administers an abortion could face a mandatory prison sentence of 2 to 5 years. That was the ruling from a court with all Republican appointees, all appointed by Republicans. And in fact, Arizona Republicans had expanded the state Supreme Court back in 2016. Yes, they packed that court, as Republicans like to describe it when non-Republicans talk about doing the very same thing.
Well, it's okay, you know, if you're a Republican.
Apparently, you know, when Democrats want to unpack the corrupted U.S. Supreme Court by adding seats to it, well, that's packing the court. But when Arizona Republicans did it back in 2016, well, there was not a peep about it, was there? As a matter of fact, I'd be willing to bet that you didn't even know about it. In any case, be careful what you pack for, Republicans. Now, as our friend Matt Gaetz over at Media Matters observes, Trump bears a share of responsibility for the ruling that happened in Arizona. It was, after all, his U.S. Supreme Court nominees who were crucial votes to overturn Roe v. Wade, eliminating the federal constitutional protections for abortion rights, and opening the door for statewide abortion bans, like what we're seeing right now in Arizona and a whole bunch of other states, sadly. The ruling is also consistent with the GOP's most recent platform, which calls for a nationwide ban on abortions. What you are seeing right now in Arizona, that's what the GOP has called for years for the entire nation. In short, the ruling is a victory for the anti-abortion movement's decades-long quest to ban the procedure, says Gertz, and could theoretically be treated as such by an ideologically conservative news outlet. But Gertz observes, you can tell that Fox's stars and executives who prioritize their effort to return Trump to the White House rather than, you know, fight for things they pretend to be conservative values, well, they think that this story in Arizona undermines their goal of getting Trump back in because the network, on the night of the decision, gave it absolutely minimal airtime. Fox provided a mere 12 minutes of coverage to the Arizona ruling, apparently, on all of Tuesday when the ruling was handed down across three different afternoon or early evening shows. So that 12 minutes was spread out over three different shows. None of those 12 minutes was actually on any of its primetime shows by its primetime stars during its most watched hours. By way of contrast, they note, CNN gave the ruling 2 hours of airtime across eight different shows, while MSNBC provided 2 hours and 20 minutes of coverage across nine different shows. Among the coverage that Fox did offer on Brett Baer's special report, Fox contributor Byron York said that the ruling, quote, seems scripted to him.
What does that even mean?
In response, he was asked a question about it. Fox contributor Byron York said that it seems scripted, that the ruling came one day after Trump's vague statement that, you know, while he was proud of overturning Roe v. Wade, that states will determine abortion rights, which, you know, we all know. That's not a position. That's just the way it is right now. The question Trump ignored in his statement the day earlier was whether he, if elected president, would ban abortion nationwide. But Byron York on Fox, in the very few minutes that the propaganda outlet even allowed its listeners to even hear about this news, York suggested that somehow the decision to completely ban almost all abortions in the state by an all-Republican state Supreme Court, quote, absolutely seems scripted. Somehow it was all scripted because it's a scam to set up Donald Trump. That was the coverage. That was basically all they got over on Fox News, some conspiracy about it.
Well, yeah, you got to make sure that Republican women don't hear about what Arizona has done with its total abortion ban before an election. Gosh, you can't have that.
Well, they didn't have it on primetime. Hosts Laura Ingraham, Jesse Waters, and Sean Hannity, all among the former president's biggest supporters at Fox, they did not even address the rulings on their evening broadcast, even as they all found time to discuss an NPR editor's claim that NPR is too liberal. They had time for that. Instead, the trio and their guests on that show had touted Trump's statement on Monday on abortion, arguing that the former president was, quote, entirely right and had enshrined states' rights while dodging the political consequences of extreme and unpopular GOP-backed abortion bans. But Tuesday's ruling showed the horrifying and politically disastrous consequences of such a state-by-state regime, so they pretended on those shows that it never happened, said Gertz. Now, by Wednesday, apparently, they couldn't ignore it anymore, it seems. Sean Hannity urged Arizona Republicans to repeal the near-total abortion ban that a court had imposed on the swing state in order to contain the political damage to Trump and the GOP. But, of course, Republicans did not do that. On Wednesday, as we reported on yesterday's program, the Republicans who control both chambers of the Arizona State Legislature blocked Democratic attempts to repeal the 1864 law. In the state Senate, after one Republican had revived a bill to repeal the law that had been originally submitted by Democrats months ago and ignored by Republicans, the Republican leader of the Senate actually removed that bill from the list of things to come up for a floor vote. And in over in the state house, rather than vote on a Democratic bill to repeal the law, Republicans recessed the house and they walked out in the middle of the day. Yeah, they did. They left Democrats chanting shame, shame as they marched out of the chamber. Well, hours later, after Republicans had refused to change the law, Hannity then went on Fox News and deceived his viewers by blaming Democrats for it.
And you know what? Arizona's governor is a Democrat. The state's attorney general is a Democrat. The state legislature is almost evenly divided. If Democrats, you want to get rid of the law, well, you have a chance right now to get rid of it. And I would advise you, get rid of it. They would rather use it as a political tool ahead of November.
But they did try to get rid of it. The Democrats tried to get rid of it, and the Republicans stopped them. Boy, speaking of political tools, hi, Sean. Anyway, Hannity, he waited to take a position on the matter to, though this law needs to be changed, until after Trump had spoken out about it. He needed to make sure that he was in line with Trump, basically. Earlier in the day on Wednesday, Trump said that Arizona went too far, despite, you know, just 2 days earlier proudly boasting about leaving all of it to the states. Finally, responding on Wednesday night with the ludicrous suggestion that Arizona Democrats were deliberately sabotaging efforts to repeal the law for political gain. Now, even Hannity is in favor of repealing that law after years of describing abortion as murder. But, you know, I guess a little bit of murder is just fine if it will help you win an election. Right, Sean?
And the people on the left are so desperate attacking Trump now for an Arizona Supreme Court ruling that upholds what is a Civil War era law banning abortion. This will be fixed in the next week or two. Let not your heart be troubled. I can pretty much assure that that will happen.
Yeah, he can assure that's going to happen. Anyway, hilarious. As Gertz notes, the political consequences of Republicans' actions are devastating for the GOP, so the party's candidates like Trump and Arizona's U.S. Senate candidate Kerry Lake, who previously supported that 1864 bill, but now that it's been revived, they're all suddenly running away from it. While propagandists like Sean Hannity are trying to deceive the public about who is actually to blame for this.
If they could lock the Fox News viewers in a room, they would, I think.
Yes,
the Fox News bubble is real. They're trying to seal them in there so they can't hear anything until November.
And it's not a problem only in Arizona, by any means. Down in Florida, Republican U.S. Senator Rick Scott, who is up for re-election, he is also, like Kerry Lake, sort of trying to soften and or flip-flop on his abortion position following the Arizona ruling and following his own state Supreme Court's ruling in Florida, which has both allowed a 6-week ban to take effect in the Sunshine State and allowed a constitutional amendment for the ballot this November there as well to restore and protect reproductive rights in the Sunshine State. So this is going to be on the ballot literally in both Arizona and Florida this year as a constitutional amendment, as well going to be on the ballot for all of these candidates, all of these Republicans who have been yelling and screaming for all of these years to ban abortion. Now they're getting their way, and they couldn't be running faster away from it. So, yes, going to have a huge effect on both of those states, Florida and Arizona. Florida used to be a swing state, a battleground state. I think that could be the case again this year. We'll see. But listen, if you're already sick of hearing about the 2024 election, good news. I've got a story about the 2025 election for you today.
Oh, God, no.
Which I believe is our first. The longest serving member of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, the Wisconsin Supreme Court's new 4-3 liberal majority, announced on Thursday that she would not run for re-election next spring, shaking up a consequential race in a swing state and improving the odds that so-called conservatives could retake the control that they lost last year after some 15 years of right-wingers controlling that court. Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, who has served in the court since 1995, told the Washington Post ahead of her announcement that she is confident someone who shares her liberal judicial philosophy can replace her after she completes her term. But her unexpected retirement sets the stage for an intense race for control of the court 2 years after candidates, political parties, and interest groups spent more than $50 million in the most expensive judicial race in U.S. history, which, by the way, is obscene. Anyway, the conservatives' reign on the court, as Washington Post describes it, ended finally last year after that election when voters elected Janet Protasiewicz to the court and liberals gained a 4-3 majority. In December, after Protasiewicz was sworn in, the court's liberals struck down at long last GOP gerrymandered election maps that since 2011 have all but guaranteed Republican near supermajority control of the state legislature. And now major cases loom before the court right now. The justices will hear arguments just next month on whether to reverse a 2022 decision by the Republican judges that had banned the use of drop boxes that voters used in 2020 to return absentee ballots. This fall, the court could be called on to review the outcome of the presidential election, just as it was in 2020. So there will be a liberal majority in place for that. But then after next spring, who knows? The court is expected to decide soon whether to accept cases that would determine whether abortion remains legal in the state of Wisconsin. If it takes the cases, it will weigh in on the issue soon after the top courts in Florida and Arizona ruled in favor of abortion bans in those states. Whether the Wisconsin court takes up the cases immediately or waits to hear them later, either way, abortion is expected to be a major issue in the 2025 race to fill her seat. Brad Schimmel, a suburban Milwaukee judge, former state AG, and abortion opponent, he has announced that he would be running for the state Supreme Court. He announced that last November. So the April 25 race will absolutely be critical for Republicans because they have to then defend seats in 2026 and 27. So if they don't gain control of the court next year, they will not have another opportunity to do so until 2028. So really, this may be our first 26, 27, or 2028 election story.
Yikes.
You're welcome. But we will use it as a reminder today that the fight for your rights and your democracy does not end with any one single election. We'll also use it as an opportunity to play this clip from Jon Stewart on The Daily Show from a month or two ago. I think we may have already played it once, but I think it's good enough that it is worth playing again.
Look, the next 9 months or so, and maybe more than that, depending on the coup schedule, they're going to suck. You're going to be getting emails with insane subject lines like, "Hello, John, it's Chuck Schumer." "Donald Trump is right behind you with a knife." You're going to get inundated with robocalls and push polls and real polls, and people are going to tell you to rock the vote and be the vote and vote the vote. And it's all going to make you feel like Tuesday, November 5th is the only day that matters. And that day does matter. But man, November 6th ain't nothing to sneeze at, or November 7th. If your guy loses, bad things might happen. But the country is not over. And if your guy wins, the country is in no way saved. The work of making this world resemble one that you would prefer to live in is a lunch pail job, day in and day out, where thousands of committed, anonymous, smart, and dedicated people bang on closed doors and pick up those that are fallen and grind away on issues till they get a positive result, and even then have to stay on to make sure that result holds. So the good news is, I'm not saying you don't have to worry about who wins the election. I'm saying you have to worry about every day before it and every day after. forever. Although, on the plus side, I am told that at some point, the sun will run out of hydrogen.
And on that note, we may have related news in today's Green News Report. That is next on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Late, late, late again. I'm like the, is it the Mad Hatter who's always late?
Yes.
Late again. So let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
The period that we're living through right now is the warmest that humanity has faced in the last 100,000 years or so.
March 2024 was the hottest March ever recorded, continuing a 10-month record streak.
Today's rulings make very clear that the European states have a legal responsibility to take real climate action.
European court rules Switzerland's climate inaction violates human rights. Plus,
the EPA says the cancer risk here is almost 50 times the national average.
EPA cracks down on pollution from chemical plants and toxic forever chemicals in drinking water.
All of those crackdowns and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This rule alone will reduce the cancer risk for people living in these communities by 96%.
Yep. But I bet Republicans are still gonna sue you, EPA Administrator Michael Regan. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, month after month after month, the hits just keep on coming, don't they?
Yes, they do. Another month, another global heat record. March 2024 was the hottest March ever recorded since record keeping began in the 1850s. That's according to Europe's climate agency, Copernicus. It's the 10th month in a row to set a new heat record for that month. Global average sea surface temperatures in March were also the warmest ever observed for the 12th month in a row. Scientists say the rising global heat is driven primarily by humanity's burning of fossil fuels, plus a boost from El Nino. Man-made global warming is causing cascading consequences around the globe, intensifying extreme storms, heat, wildfires, droughts, and rising sea levels.
Well, I understand the El Nino is starting to wind down.
Yes.
So in theory, we should stop seeing these records pretty soon, right?
We'll see.
Okay.
In other news, in an unprecedented decision, the European Court of Human Rights ruled this week that Switzerland violated human rights because it has not done enough to protect its citizens from the impacts of global warming.
Nice.
2,000 elderly Swiss women brought the case, arguing their demographic is among the most vulnerable to climate change, especially during heat waves. Experts say the climate ruling could influence similar cases in the U.S. and around the world, since it establishes new, legally binding obligations on EU member states to move faster to cut emissions.
Good. I hope it does.
In Ohio, railroad giant Norfolk Southern has agreed to pay $600 million to settle a class action lawsuit over last year's train derailment and fiery explosion in East Palestine, Ohio, that released toxic chemicals. Residents fear the settlement won't be sufficient to cover future health care expenses. The settlement is a fraction of the $3 billion in revenue Norfolk Southern generated in just the first 3 months of this year. Congressional Republicans have blocked passage of railroad safety reform legislation opposed by the railroad industry.
I don't understand. They were so furious about this East Palestine train derailment that happened under Joe Biden. But now that their friends in the rail industry have lobbied against it, suddenly they're against it too? Huh.
But some really big news. The Biden Environmental Protection Agency this week finalized the first ever standards to limit dangerous PFAS forever chemicals that now contaminate nearly half the drinking water in the United States. PFAS forever chemicals don't break down in the environment and are linked to serious illnesses and several types of cancers. Municipal water systems will be required to test for and remove six types of PFAS chemicals in drinking water. The agency also announced an additional $1 billion in funding from the infrastructure law to help defray the cost of testing and treatment of the chemicals, bringing the Biden EPA's total investment to combat PFAS contamination to $21 billion.
Very good. Although, as I said, Republicans are going to try to sue them to stop this, to stop saving people from getting cancer.
And in a victory for things that breathe, the EPA this week also cracked down on pollution from more than 200 chemical plants from Texas to the Ohio River Valley.
Oh, they're definitely suing against that.
The new standards, the biggest update in decades, require chemical and petrochemical plants to reduce toxic industrial emissions to protect adjacent neighborhoods, disproportionately low-income and minority communities. Like coastal Louisiana, nicknamed Cancer Alley, because of the unusually high concentration of cancers. Here's EPA Administrator Michael Regan announcing the new standards.
This rule alone will reduce the cancer risk for people living in these communities by 96%. We're going to deploy every tool in our toolbox to protect these communities that have suffered for far too long.
Thank you, Mr. Administrator. Let the lawsuits begin. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
About time and some good news. Finally.
It is about damn time. And I'm telling you what, as I mentioned at the top of the show, when the history books are written and people look back at what the Biden administration has been doing on climate, and we started the show on gun safety, that he's finally closing the background check loophole.
Yep.
The history books are going to smile on him, at least on those things. Whether voters do this fall remains a different question. We'll find out soon enough. All right. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other we've ever done, download it for free at bradblog.com. No paywall there. Thanks to those of you kind enough to stop by bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. We rely only on you, so thank you in advance. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, you'll find me at TheBradBlog. See you there. Until we see you here next time. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.